Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. I've been reading in New Yorker magazine a very, what I think is an important and interesting article. And many of you out there will appreciate it and want to read the entire article. It's entitled Invasion of the Robot Umpires. The minor leagues have been testing the automated ball strike system. But isn't yelling and screaming about bad calls half the fun of baseball? Don't we go to the ballpark to yell at the umpire, yell at our heroes, and at the opposing team? Well, automation is accurate. But do we watch baseball to kill time, or do we watch it to maximize time? This article says, grown men wearing tights like to yell terrible things at Fred DeJesus. DeJesus is an umpire in the outer constellations of professional baseball, where he's been spat on. And once he was challenged to a post-game fight in a parking lot. He was born in Bushwick, Brooklyn, to Puerto Rican parents. He stands 5'3" and is shaped in his chest protector like a fire hydrant. He once ejected a player for saying that he suffered from little man syndrome. 2 years ago, DeJesus became the first umpire in a regular season game anywhere to use something called the automated ball strike system. Most players refer to it as the robo umpire. Major League Baseball has designed the system and was testing it in the Atlantic League, where DeJesus works. The term robo-umpire conjures a little R2-D2 positioned behind the plate, beeping for strikes and booping for balls. But for aesthetic and practical reasons, Major League Baseball wanted human umpires to announce the calls, as if play-acting their former roles. So DeJesus had his calls fed to him through an earpiece connected to a modified missile tracking system. The contraption looked like a large black pizza box with one glowing green eye. It was mounted above the press box. When the first pitch came in, a recorded voice told DeJesus it was a strike. He announced it, and no one in the ballpark said anything. The eeriest thing about the robo umpire is the silence. This summer, the author of this article attended some games in Central Islip, New York, which is the Long Island Ducks. He went there to check out this thing. The pizza box device is made by a company called TrackMan. And it was founded by two Danish brothers, Klaus and Morten Eldrup Jørgensen, who created it to train golfers. It's easy to miss. At one of DeJesus' games, it was observed a kind of Turing test. Turing, you remember, was the fellow associated with the decoding of German code during World War II. Starting in the fifth inning, a lanky middle-aged guy behind home plate started heckling. Move the bleeping game along, he said, after DeJesus announced a ball. And a few minutes later, after a call he disliked, he yelled, "Look at him. How can he even see over the catcher?" A man in a Mets cap nearby pointed up at the device, explaining that the calls were automated, and the heckler appeared confused. "Can he overrule it?" The Mets hat shook his head. The heckler, looking embarrassed, replied, "He's called a good game, I guess." Baseball is a game of waiting and talking. For 150 years or so, the strike zone, the imaginary box over home plate, which is 17 inches wide and stretching from the batter's knees to the middle of his chest, has been the game's animating force. The argument between manager and umpire is where the important disputes over its boundaries are litigated. The first umpires were volunteers, and they wore top hats, at whom spectators hurled curses, bottles, and all manner of organic and inorganic debris. According to a paper which was read at a meeting of the Society for American Baseball Research, organic debris wasn't defined, but one wonders. A handful of early umpires were killed. Well, the rules of engagement involved in fits and in starts. And today, everyone knows that an aggravated party can kick the dirt, but not over the plate, which is the umpire's area, and he maintains it with his special brush. You may scream in an umpire's face, but you must never touch him. Remember the movie Bull Durham with Kevin Costner? Kevin Costner was the catcher for a minor league team. And he doesn't get ejected when he says that the ump made a bleeping, bleeping, bleeping call. But he does get tossed out of the game when he calls the man himself a bleeping, 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 bleeping. That's a no-no. Lip readers or hot mics sometimes reveal these arguments to be admirable examples of candor and of dispute resolution. Two stressed out guys trying their best with fans or bosses breathing down their necks. More often, arguments are like stock car wrecks. They're grotesque, morally indefensible, and the thing a lot of people secretly root for. Let's hope that the automated robot umpire doesn't make too much of an intrusion into Major League Baseball. But I fear that we're going to be seeing it rather soon. Are you ready for another road trip? In today's program, we're going to take a road trip to national parks out west. We're going to start in Zion National Park, Utah, and we'll end in Canyonlands National Park, Utah. It's a distance of 352 miles. Sculpted by wind and water over countless centuries, actually, millennia would be more accurate. The remote canyons and plateaus of southeastern Utah were among the last parts of the American West to be seen by travelers from the East. What a difference a century or two can make. Today, that rugged landscape is home to some of the most popular national parks in the country. They are collectively known as the Mighty Five. They boast dramatic desert landscapes, soaring arches, deep slot canyons, and reach for the sky rocky spires. You'll need several days to take in all of the natural wonders. It's a long trip, but you won't mind because of the beauty. Starting with the red rock landscape of chasms and hanging gardens at Zion National Park. The views here make you feel as though you're flying, especially at Angel's Landing, which juts 1,500 feet above the Virgin River. Then you head 75 miles northwest along Highway 89A. You're going to Bryce Canyon National Park. You'll spy the soaring orange rock formations that are known as hoodoos long before you arrive at the park gates. Next up, how about a trip to Mars? The red sandstone of Capitol Reef National Park is 100 miles to the northeast, and it so resembles the look of the red planet that a Mars desert research station is located here. Roll 130 miles north for another otherworldly sight. Arches National Park's more than 2,000 dazzling stone arches, the largest profusion of natural arches in the world. And the bonus is, if you discover a new one, if you find a new colorful arch, you get to name it. Finally, drive on to the Needle Pinnacles, the rock mazes, and the remote canyons carved by the Colorado and the Green Rivers at neighboring Canyonlands National Park. The vast wilderness area offers crowd-free experiences in this remote part of the West. It will make you feel as though you are all alone with mesmerizing landscapes. So, not an especially easy trip, but one that's very worthwhile taking when you plan your summer trip, either next year, but there's still time this year. And now some information about climate migration. Extreme weather events, many of which are rooted in climate change, could displace some 216 million people within their own countries by the year 2050. This, according to a new study from the World Bank. And that is only in poorer countries. Another study estimates that every additional day each year with an average temperature of about 90 degrees Fahrenheit adds nearly 1% to the number of climate migrants. Added to the tens of millions of people who have fled war or political strife, as we have witnessed in Afghanistan, solutions to forced migration are more urgent than ever. The World Bank's new research, titled Groundswell Part 2, offers this suggestion. If governments take quick remedial action, they could cut internal migration and the hardships it brings by as much as 60% to even 80%. The action most needed would be to reduce worldwide emissions of greenhouse gases. A United Nations climate change conference of the parties, COP26, is scheduled to be held in early November in Glasgow, Scotland. This is a follow-up to the Paris Climate Accords of 2015. As governments struggle to pledge and keep promises to reduce emissions, the World Bank says concurrent steps can be taken to build resiliency and to fend off the worst effects of climate migration. These include ways to help people stay in their homes, as well as to help in their movement to and resettlement in new locations. In Egypt, for example, parts of the Nile Delta are projected to be places of out-migration. Several cities, including Cairo, should expect to receive these refugees. The report notes that planners could identify places most likely to be hit the hardest by climate change and help the more climate-resilient areas prepare to take in migrants. Many other ways to help ease climate migrations are available. More drought-resistant crops, for example, are being developed that could help keep farmers home. Rooftop water harvesting can be used to irrigate fields. In some villages in India, where water harvesting and other water conservation methods are being undertaken, climate migration has been reversed, and migrants are returning to their homes. It is essential to invest in building local climate resilience and protecting community economies, according to this report. Ways to mitigate climate migration are becoming well known. Even as nations try to curb carbon emissions, they can also put measures in place to solve the rising displacement of people by weather disasters. This is the part of the program where we look at some items about health and science. In an earlier program, I said I was going to be talking about microplastics, especially those that have been found in baby poo. And marijuana's nauseous side effects, and dairy and cholesterol. So the first of these, microplastics have been found in every corner of the world, from remote mountaintops to the deepest oceans. And now scientists have found the tiny specks of synthetic material in baby poo. After sifting through the dirty diapers, researchers found an average of 36,000 nanograms of polyethylene terephthalate, PET, per gram of feces, 10 times more than in adult samples. They even found PET in newborns' first feces, known as meconium, suggesting that babies already have plastics in their systems when they're born. The findings add growing evidence that infants may have more exposure to microplastics than adults. A study last year found that preparing hot formula in plastic bottles can erode the material, potentially dosing babies with several million microplastic particles every day. Infants also chew on plastic toys, they drink from plastic sippy cups, and they crawl around on carpets made from polyester, another name for PET. Babies are exposed to so many different things for which they don't know what kind of effect they can have later in their life. Previous research has found that some plastics contain at least 10,000 different chemicals, a quarter of which are of concern for human health. That group includes endocrine disrupting chemicals, which disrupt hormones and have been linked to neurological, reproductive, and metabolic problems. This would seem to be a very serious problem, and we should look to it quickly. And then there's marijuana's nauseous side effect. As more and more states legalize marijuana, doctors are noticing a trend is of worry. Habitual users of the drug, including teenagers, are increasingly showing up in emergency rooms, suffering from uncontrollable vomiting. They are writhing and holding their stomach, complaining of really bad abdominal pain and nausea. They vomit and then just continue to vomit whatever they have in their stomachs, which can go on for hours. And there's a shortage of national data on the problem. Here again, a problem that we should look to as quickly as possible. And finally, it's been found that high consumption of full-fat cheese, yogurt, and milk is linked to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. An international team of researchers examined the fat intake of more than 4,000 Swedish 60-year-olds using blood samples to obtain an accurate figure. They then followed the participants for an average of 17 years to see how many suffered cardiovascular problems. And after adjusting for lifestyle factors, it was found that those with the highest levels of dairy fat, fatty acids in their blood had the lowest risk for cardiovascular disease and no increased risk of death from all causes. And now it looks like we're nearing the end of our program today. Just a few last words that might interest you. South Korea's Squid Game is on course to become the most popular show ever on Netflix after it soared to number one in 90 countries. The show is on a pace to be seen by more than 82 million subscribers worldwide during its first month. That's more than the number of 18 to 49-year-olds estimated by Nielsen to have watched the 40 highest-rated broadcast and cable shows of the past year put together. And now, it's time to say goodbye and to ask you to please turn in next time, 101.5 on your FM dial. Please come back. We'd like to have you. I miss you when you're not here. You take care out there. When you take care of yourself, you're also helping to take care of others. And now, my friend Willie Nelson and I are going to be hitting the road again as we look for some more items for a little of this, a little of that. And so for today, wish you good fortune and good health. Goodbye.